wanted. There really only was one that we really wanted. Actually, was Bill Murray. Actually, at one point, we played with the idea of Bill Murray and Eddie Murphy being Batman and Robin.
Black Man and Robin.
Which was which?
So, well, we would. Bill Murray would have played Batman, and Eddie Murphy would have played Robin. But in any event, I would tell that that would get a big laugh over the years. You know, so a lot of these movies, when you Peter and I have done 60-some movies, so, you know, a lot of these movies begin in concept and as party jokes. You know what I mean? We say, well, I got this idea, and this girl, she takes her clothes off, whatever it is. And it becomes, you know, all of a sudden she supports the idea. And Batman was always something that we really wanted to do and worked on for a long time. But the idea of Bill Murray set the tone of the movie in the sense that we wanted someone who had a comedic sensibility but also had a dark side and also had a kind of explosive side, which most comics do, especially Bill Murray. And not until we saw Beetlejuice did we realize that this guy who played Mr. Mom had a ferocious side and was completely unbelievably explosive. And that's when we started really zeroing in. Now there was a mention of all kinds of other characters to be play Batman, and every agent in Hollywood would call us and whatever. But both Peter and I really kind of hung in until we met Michael.
How did the final tone of the film comes out in? How was that arrived at? Not to make it campy, to, you know, nod to what?
Choice in character, choice in casting. When we did the original script, we paid Tom Mankiewicz some $750,000 9 years ago to write the first draft, and then like about seven drafts from there. What never really worked for us, it was like Superman. You know, it was derivative. You know, it wasn't original. It wasn't different. It wasn't unique. It was like, God, I've seen this before. I don't want to do this again. You know, and not until Sam Hamm did this version, which was a darker, more of a street version, more of an aggressive, ferocious fighter, did we start to understand the kind of direction that we wanted to really totally go in. We always liked the comic books, which was more like this. Mm-hmm. And then Tim, who has a kind of a warm, loving kind of a character and has a wonderful, ironic sense of humor, got involved. And then, of course, Jack. You know, scripts are like a blueprint, like a house, you know. You have a blueprint, and then not until you begin to build it and shape it and do you understand what you really have. So we, if that answers your question, I think it evolved. It really, when by the time we were finished, the evolution of Batman was made. Mm. The uniqueness and the design, the originality, was something we always wanted to do. How we were going to get there, we weren't exactly sure. You know, we knew that Batman had, because of the nature of the character, who it was a kid who dedicated his life to solving crime and to avenging the death of his parents, because his parents were murdered when he was a little boy, and went introspectively into himself, only really related to his butler, and then began to invent all of these wild inventions, which is what he used to kind of set the record straight in a city that was decaying and everything. We knew that he had to be a lovable character, and that a lot of that had to do with the love story and how you cared about him and the fact that he was a sensitive guy. And
well, why did you want him to be lovable? Why not take him all the way to, like, the Dark Knight?
Because we felt that as a human being, it was important. You want to come in?
Yes.
You can sit here. As a human being, we wanted you to care for him. We wanted you to, you know, feel for him. We had another problem with Jack, which we had to be careful didn't like him too much. Because this guy could shoot you and laugh at you, and you love him, you know, because everybody loves him so much. So we wanted a story that basically had some warmth to it and some love. And one of the difficult things, even that, was in the scene where Michael Keaton came to Batman and said, to Kim Basinger, and wanted to tell her that he was Batman in that wonderful way that he invented, where he got a Batman, you know, and she loses on Batman, which is a good thing. So, you know, we wanted to make a movie, not just a kind of a lethal weapon, so to speak.
When did Jack come into the project?
Pardon?
How soon did Jack Nicholson come into the project?
Jack Nicholson heard about Batman and the Joker for the first time with me in Boston on Witches of Eastwick at about 4 o'clock in the morning when we were preparing for the church sequence, where he was saying to me, I signed on to play the devil, but I don't want to throw up on all these people, it's going to ruin my career. No, Jack, this is part of the character. Don't worry, you'll be wonderful. And I said, just to get your mind off it, let me tell you about a movie I want to do called Batman, and I think you should play the... Anyhow, so it began some year and a half or 2 years ago.
I'm curious about Bob Kane's involvement, to what extent there was any.
Bob Kane's involvement was a great deal. A, he invented the character and created in the comic books and his involvement in it, a great deal of backstory or whatever. Not a lot of involvement in the making of the movie and the writing of the script. In that, Peter and I have made 60 movies, we've won 40 Academy Awards, whatever. You know, we really had a particular way of working and a particular style. I don't know that it's 40, by the way. I mean, we'll stop off the count them, you know, which is, you know, whatever. But in any event, we have a company and we make our own movies and we do our own things. So there wasn't. And when, what I think he was involved in the sense that we tried to stay somewhat true to Batman and the story.
What were there any concerns?
Yeah, exactly.
His biggest concern dovetails into a story, which I'll tell you. His biggest concern, I think, was the fact that we cast Michael Keaton. And so was all the Bat fanatics all over the world. There are millions of them.
Right.
And when we were shooting the movie, the final article came out, the journal, the
Wall Street
Journal.
Oh, Wall Street.
Where they absolutely, completely crucified us for choosing him. And did some research about bat conventions all over the United States. Are you waiting to sit down?
No.
Oh, okay. Bat conventions all over the United States where they were booing the concept of Michael Keaton and really feeling that we were bastardizing the movie. And I mean, these are very aggressive people. My partner and I, Peter Gruber and Mark Canton, who runs Warner Brothers, went into the editing room. We didn't even tell Tim or Michael or anybody because we didn't want to bum everybody out. You're making a movie and you're wearing a cape and you start reading about all the shit. It's hard to go out there and do all this stuff because, again, you know, you got Jack Nicholson, one of America's great actors, playing a guy who smiles all the time. You know, that's a big risk. You know, he could embarrass himself in Michael Keaton running around in a cape. In any event, we cut this trailer, which became this kind of a famous trailer. And we took the trailer back to America. No narrative, no dialogue, no music, no names of who it was, just actual films of the footage, footage of film. And we put it in the theater, and it basically changed the direction of the perception of the movie and really got Bob Kane on our side. Now, he was always on our side, being supportive, but in his heart, I don't think he believed it, because I think he was scared of people calling it Wimp Man as opposed to Batman.
Did you resent that intrusion by the Bat fans?
No.
Like, you're trying to make a movie here? And
No, because I realized that it's like me getting angry about being in the ghetto and people looking at me, what am I doing there? In other words, I joined this thing called Batman, and the fans were my audience, our audience, and I didn't intentionally try to figure a way to please them. I just figured that I'm a fighter. I had 90 fights as a fighter. I'm an aggressive guy. I'm like a kind of rough guy in Hollywood, so to speak. I knew how to make a movie with a guy that could kick ass, you know. And I believe that Michael Keaton could kick ass. So I believe that if we made the movie we wanted to make, that ultimately people would discover what we discovered. But I don't think I realized the depth and the intensity of the Bat fanatics all over the country. I didn't really.
How about the Robin factor then?
We didn't really play with it. We played with that kind of, but we just realized that we really couldn't put... I didn't want to do Robin yet, number one. Number two, we didn't feel that we could fit it into the story because we needed to tell the story of the boy and his life and how he got to be Batman, so to speak. Now, if we do a second one, which would be a trilogy. We do three films. If we did the second one in this trilogy, we would bring and introduce Robin by the fact that Batman would, in fact, find some kid and bring him into his life, and it would then be his partner in helping them as the intensity and the decay of the city starts to grow and more villains come up to try to take over the city, and he tries to help.
What villains do you have in mind, or have you drawn any names?
Take your pick. One of the ones we're looking at is the Penguin. I mean, you know, there's a lot of...
You have Two-Face set up.
Yeah, there's a lot of different characters. You know?
Well, how likely is a second movie?
If it's half as big as the anticipation, do you know what I mean? If it's half as big as the advance, I mean, almost all the theaters, in the 2,000 theaters, the phones have been ringing for 3 weeks trying to buy advance tickets. All over. If the movie does what we think, we'll go into the second
one. Which is what?
You mean numbers? Yeah. I have no idea. Rain Man will end up doing $600 million from all sources worldwide. I never thought it'd do that, so who knows?
Okay, but Batman, they're talking about big money, and then this summer...
I don't know.
In your mind, I mean, is it 150? Is it 200? What makes a sequel for you?
Good question. You got me there. Okay. I think what makes a sequel is a picture that does, from all sources, over $100 million. You know what I mean? That would be domestic, foreign, all those different things. Enough of a demand to warrant the cost of going out and doing it and everything, you know?
Are you at all concerned that the merchandising has gotten sort of out of control?
Sure, absolutely. That's a good question.
I've seen cardboard simulated push cards in theater lobbies.
Let's take it on two levels. The first level is for the last 50 years, there are licensees with Batman licenses. So that means that you and your business in whatever town you're from have this license to do Batman products, and you've been earning a living from it. We come along now and put together this movie, and you've got thousands of you people with these licenses. I can't stop that. I can't put them out of business. What we did is we stopped all of our stuff. We did nothing. We did three things up until a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. Now our campaign kicks in to sell our movie. Which you have to do, that's what the business is. One, we cut a trailer, which, again, was a minimalist trailer. There was no name, there was no you, there's no Nicholson, there's no Keaton, there's no narration, there's no nothing, there's just the footage. We then did a campaign that's just an image. We took the name off, our idea. No stars' names on it, nothing, just the image. People thought it was tonsils. Oh. They didn't know, people thought, you know what I mean? They didn't know. And then it built it. So we kept it very clean and lean. All this other stuff that was happening around us, I couldn't stop it. Then we cut the third trailer, and on the 23rd of May, when Indiana Jones opened, we did one night, block by across the country, of just the trailer, all the stuff from the movie. That's it. That's nothing compared to this. Now, in the last 2 weeks, you're seeing the theaters. Things are starting to gear up. So a lot of the negativity about the merchandising, which is in the form of the reviewers, really, or the press, not in the audiences. Audiences are eating it up. They're buying it all. They can't keep it on the shelves. I mean, you go buy in there, there's T-shirts, everything. I mean, it's the largest advance, a consumption before a movie in the history of the business has ever come out. And I think it has a lot to do with it's been around for 50 years.
Are you worried, though, about the bat symbol becoming kind of a smile face for the 1990 that we're heading into?
I don't know about smile face.
It's just everywhere.
I think it's cooler than a smile face. And yeah. I think what happens is that I'm not worried about anything. Where I come from, I made something I'm really proud of. I think that it's a great movie. I think it's a spectacular movie. I think that the people that have been involved in this movie are really talented, and I'm happy with that. And the you guys saw it. I don't know what kind of, what it was like when you saw it last. I guess, did you see it last night? When you saw it last night? But when we screened it in San Diego, kids almost tore the theater down, So we just did it. We have a video coming out that Prince did, a video of this bat single, the song, which is not in the movie, but inspired by the movie. It's the number one single in the country. I mean, this is going to be a big picture.
With all the... build up anticipation, the 50 years of people loving the thing, all that stuff.
Number one, because we make movies, we're artists, In other words, we made a movie, we didn't make a campaign. Mm-hmm. I don't need more money. I got all the money I could spend in 9 lifetimes. I wanted to make a movie, and all of us got
a grant?
How much? $100,000?
A grant.
A grant? You want a grant? Okay, give him a grant. So, that's right. So, the thing is that When you look at the films Flashdance, Rain Man, Color Purple, Midnight Express, Stars Born, Caddyshack, we start adding them up. We've made a lot of movies. We wanted to make a fantastic movie. You know, the guy, Anton Furst, who did the sets, was Kubrick's guy. You know, because that theory could say, well, you know what, I'm going to put these two guys in a movie and I'm going to let them talk to each other and really set up to make a movie. I've been working on this 10 years. I want to build Gotham City. You never saw that city before. That's on 100 acres. You know, that city took a long time to build. I wanted to build something that was really, really cool and inventive and creative and different. I'm bored with a lot of these. I wanted to do something unique and interesting. You know, I wanted to have Jack Nicholson play the Joker, Michael Keaton play Batman, Kim Basinger. You know, we wanted to do something unique and different. Challenge ourselves. Yes,
the set still up.
Yeah.
You talked about the tone of the piece earlier, and you just talked about the set. How much of that was influenced by the Dark Knight comic?
A lot of it. You know what I mean? All the comics, really. You know, the kind of a world and a kind of a tone where it erupts out of the city. You know, if somebody said to me, well, we're trying to set a precedent with the city. I said, you've been to New York lately? You've been to Chicago? You've been to Detroit? You want to go downtown here and check it out? We're living in a time where the number one music in the United States is rap music. Guys with chains talking in the streets about war and violence and bringing yourself up. Gotham City ain't too far away from that.
How about Plastic Man? Are you still...
Yeah, we have a lot of, you know, we have 160 films in development, so we have a lot of different...
How many, there's been a lot of talk recently about the comic book movies. You've got a couple there.
We have a dozen or so.
Yeah, what are their appeal for you?
I don't know yet. I have to, you know, we revisit the well, like go in the box and say, okay, what are we going to do next? We look, you know, there's no comic book movie on the horizon for us at the moment. We're doing Bonfires of the Vanity with Brian De Palma that starts in September. We're doing a picture that we wrote now called Set Up with Sylvester Stallone and Kurt Russell, which is a kind of a Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. We have a lot of different kinds of things.
Was there ever any thought of maybe changing the type of this movie? Because to a lot of people, Nicholson is the focus.
You mean the cult Joker, you mean? No. No, because it's Batman, you know? I mean, in other words, Nicholson is the focus until you see a 13-year-old kid come in and watch that guy kick the shit out of everybody. He goes home and he puts on his outfit and he wants to be Batman. No, I think it's got a lot of different colors and a lot of different levels to it. Yeah.
Why does Nicholson have top billing?
I think it's the way it worked out. You know, he's a bigger star, and in some cases he does. Some situations you see Keaton first, but you know, I don't. You know, that's contractual.
And you haven't seen the contract,
huh?
You haven't seen the contract.
Well, I made the contract. So what I'm saying is, I don't know what constitutes a bigger star. Is he more important? Is he a bigger star than Michael Keaton? I don't. You know.
What was this one of his demands for taking?
Well, all stars have, you know, it's like all stars have their level of, you know, the answer to that question. What do you answer that?
How did Prince get involved?
Why did he get involved?
How?
He got involved because we wanted him to, and we, at one point, we played with the idea of Michael Jackson and Prince doing the score together, kind of as like rival factions, you know? And then we met Danny Elfman, and we decided to do more of a symphonic score in conjunction with Prince, writing some of the music and the love theme and the various other different things. And he got so involved in the picture, they write so much music that the actual soundtrack has things from the movie and not, but it inspired by. So it was our idea.
It's been said that he was reluctant at first, but
when he saw the movie, he loved the movie. Yeah, you know, because he's Batman, basically, too. You know what I mean? He's a form of it, and he's dark, and he's aggressive, and he kind of comes up with these wild things. And when you see his video, it's like totally crazy.
How are those arrangements made? I mean, how do you do that with a record company? You know, go there and so.
I think that Michael. Well, sure. I'm sure he's done a lot of things, I guess. But I'm thrilled with what he did. I think that he's sympathetic, that he's emotional, that he's gentle, that he's kind of peculiar. He's kind of dark, you know. And I think he has a really explosive side. And I think he did a great job.
You finally choose Tim Burton to direct, and did it working with him live up to your expectations?
Yeah, more so. He was the most pleasurable of the whole thing. I think he's one of the most inventive, creative filmmakers that we have in our business.
Does he have to be involved really for a sequel to happen?
Pardon me?
Does Tim Burton have to be involved if there's a sequel?
Me personally, probably wouldn't make the movie unless Tim did it. Because I love him and he's a family, and when you work that long with somebody on a movie and you're that involved with someone on a movie, you know, it's real connected. And I think he, you know, and I think that if the audiences want it and if it works and all that, I think that he'll be involved and we'll all fit it in our schedule.
But why was he chosen in the first place?
Because I just thought he was completely, totally inventive. I mean, Beetlejuice was imaginative, and I wanted to take... See, in these kinds of movies, people take a very head-on... Look at Superman. The reason Superman kind of dwindled out, I think, is because it was used up as a culture. You know, you had seen that over and over and over, and every time you see one of these superhero movies, Superwoman, it's all basically the same thing. This is upside down. You take this movie, turn it upside down. Completely unique, completely different, completely unexpected. And to answer your question over there about Michael Keaton, he's explosive. When that scene, there aren't many direct actors that you know, or that I know, that I work with, have or ever worked with, can hold up to Jack Nicholson in a face-to-face show-off to each other when he says, you know, look, this is, I know who you are. When they have that scene together, that's what I wanted, was that explosiveness, you know. I think that there was a risk and there was some thought that maybe possibly Bruce Wayne could be funnier. Certainly, God knows, Michael Keaton could be funnier. But we chose to keep it that color, you know. You know, when you make a movie of this size, excuse me, and I'll finish. When you make a movie of this size, you accomplish some things, and some things you don't. You know what I mean? It's such a large undertaking. You have so many elements. Just the money, the time, the shape, the whole thing. You never really finish, you know.
In fact, that was tied to that. As ambitious as you wanted this to be, was there an extravagance or an expense that maybe you had to say no to at one point? Some vision of a scene or an event, and you just finally said, no, it's going too far. Budget-wise.
No. No, I mean, honestly, you know, the only thing that I think that never happened that I was kind of set on for 10 minutes was this idea of Michael and Prince doing the music, you know? And then I never didn't know I had Danny Elfman, and then Michael Keaton, Tim Burton introduced me to Danny Elfman, and I loved him, and they had, you know, I saw it a little more of a rock and roll score, and they saw that, and I came around that way. No, I basically exceeded my expectations.
After promotional expenses, what will the entire budget be for this?
Picture, the negative of this picture, not including interest, and you can figure interest at 10% over 12 months, is between $32 and $35 million. So then you got prints and ads, and
Robert Wall loved his per diem.
Yes. Yeah.
He loved his per diem.
You should go back and tell him that you've reevaluated.
Oh, he told you? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
tell him he's going to take some other back.
Yeah, yeah, he loved it. He got a lot of per diem. Thanks.
Thank you. I wonder that more producers haven't had their eye on Bob as maybe a possible, not well, leading man, maybe?
You know, let me tell you something. He's a big talent. He's a big talent. He's hysterically funny. And you'll see a lot more with him. Yep. We're developing something with him now, but he's a very talented guy.
What's the name of the film?
Universal.